And welcome back to Coaching Through the Bible. This week, the book of Exodus, the portion known as Terumah on sacred spaces. Generally speaking, in this format, in this podcast, we don't get into sort of the spiritual per se, and we sort of stay away from maybe all things sacred in that way. This week I did want to though go for a little bit of a drive through discussion about space, physical spaces. We exist in many, many physical spaces, and actually in the last year or so, for the most part, for many of us, we've been limited to the amount of different spaces we could actually find ourselves. We end up finding out that the every space in our home becomes everything all at the same time, and that the boundaries sort of blur and disappear. And so office space becomes family space, becomes sleep space, becomes eating space. And then there is no actual space. And so it's interesting for us to come back to the discussion in the Bible around the building of the tabernacle, the Mishkan, as it's known in Hebrew, and take a look for a few minutes today at the idea of creating sacred spaces. The Bible spends an enormous amount of ink in the book of Exodus on the tabernacle, on this structure. We get into great detail about the building of the building itself and the courtyard around the building and the different vessels that are going to go inside the building and how they're going to be built and what they're going to look like and what materials they're going to be made out of. And the length and width and height of every single one of them, and who's going to carry them, and how they're going to carry them, and how they're going to cover them. There's a lot there for what ultimately becomes a building which does not seem to have an eternal space, because once the people of Israel get to the Holy Land, the idea then is to build the Holy of Holies in Jerusalem, the temple in Jerusalem. And so this temporary structure, this temporary tabernacle, interestingly enough, gets a lot of space in the Bible, even though it, in theory, isn't going to be a place that's going to last very long. So I wanted to sort of wonder about that a little bit, what it is that the Bible is trying to teach us here and what it means for us with respect to sacred spaces. And so to bring it up into a greater, to the construct that we want to sort of understand it, there's a lot that revolves around the building of that tabernacle. There's a beautiful article in Covenant and Conversation by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, where he goes deeper in the language that's used to describe the building itself, and its similarities and parallels to text in Genesis on the creation of the world, that there is a relationship and a connection between the tabernacle in the desert and the creation of the world, in the beginning of Genesis. Professor Nechama Leibowitz, also in her work on Exodus, does a similar deep dive on the language later on in the book of Exodus, near the end. A similar idea, really showing the correlation and the connection and the linkage in the language between the two. And it is super interesting to see and to really sort of think about that there is a direct connection between what's happening here in the construction of this home for God in the desert and the construction or the creation of the world at the beginning of Exodus. So there's a lot that's there, there's a lot of depth there. And it's super interesting as well when you go further in it, when we talk about it here, that everything is exact. There's exact measures and exact sizes, and nothing can be bigger or smaller, longer or shorter. And it cannot be a different material. It's exactly the way God describes it to Moses, is the way that it has to be done. We have to sort of wonder about that, why that is, where that comes from, what's going on here. So on two planes, the plane of the religious spiritual, and then on the plane in terms of our leadership and our work and coaching. So the reality is the following. We require and need sacred spaces in our lives to be able to produce the most compelling and interesting and outstanding work that we can actually do. Many of us, when we were working in office settings, work in open office spaces. It's very trendy to have an open office, and people are sitting at large tables, and the actual offices disappear, and there's only a conference room, but everyone else is in an open space. You see them everywhere that's like this. The modified version of it now is sort of glass walls or companies sharing large spaces and being separated off by glass walls. But there are still a lot of open areas where people are around and milling around and around because there's a notion that the collaboration, or what's described in the book, Deep Work by Cal Newport, is this what's called theory of serendipity. The idea, as explained by some of the tech titans, that they believe in serendipity. And so by having large spaces where people can sort of walk around each other and be in and around each other and talk to each other, that collaboration will happen and great inspiration will come out of that. And to some degree, that's true. But the entire book of Deep Work argues for private spaces and creating a location and a space where a person can go deep on what it is that they're trying to do. And that ultimately, what he describes in the book is that we are in our world right now, disciples of depth in a shallow world. That because we don't do deep work, or we're not in a position to be able to do deep work, that we ultimately bring to bear shallow work. And that it takes us much longer to get to the depth that we could have gotten to in shorter periods of time. He describes really interestingly at the beginning of part two of the book this idea, what's called the, I'm going to butcher this name, so I apologize, the eudaimonia machine. The eudaimonia machine, which is the idea of building a perfect space for deep work. And then it's a series of rooms, one inside the other, sort of inside the other, insulated, that build towards a space where the person can ultimately do the greatest of deep work, what you might call the most sacred and sanctified, holy of holies space, where the person can really do the work that they need in the time that's given to them and really maximize on their intelligence. And too often what happens is that we don't get there. We don't create those spaces, and ultimately we're not successful. So the Bible, in telling us about a sacred space like a tabernacle in the center of the camp, is really telling us a lot about the kinds of spaces we need to create in our lives. There are our homes, there are our work environments, and then there are our sacred environments. Now, yes, we are supposed to, on some level, blend and bring the sanctity into the home and create a sanctified space in our homes. There's no question about it. And we do make that effort. When we think about what we want to have in certain rooms and what we want to be shown in certain places in our home, we want that to reflect about ourselves. So we are creating a form of environmental design, which is described in another great book, which I might have mentioned before, called Atomic Habits. If I haven't mentioned it before, super interesting read called Atomic Habits by a gentleman by the name of James Clear, which is the idea that tiny changes make remarkable results. And so we do try to engineer for an environmental design in our world and in our lives that that should maximize what we're trying to do. And that the smallest changes in our environmental design can have really incredible results on what it is that we're trying to do. And so God in the Bible is providing this space for the people of Israel in their camp when God is already in the camp without the space. But it's creating a context, and it's creating a construct, and it's creating a way for people to build their lives in a certain manner. And the truth is that the sacred space does have to move from one space into the next, and we have to carry it with us. As Rabbi Sacks describes in his article, the tabernacle was not a place that stayed in one location. It traveled with them. Ultimately, for the people of Israel, that became the synagogue over the course of the millennia, that's the place that they centralized location for prayer and spirituality. But it was a place that traveled with them. was the idea that on some level the tabernacle was supposed to go with you wherever you went. That if a person really built a tabernacle in a certain way, really created a sacred space, and really used that sacred space to its maximum potential and opportunity, that when that person then went off into other places and other situations and other locations, that a piece of that tabernacle would go with them. And that's because the person will have habitualized and ritualized that space to become part of their being. And so they're able to take deep work with them, if you want to use that term, to other places. They're able to take that habitualized situation and create it in other places. Over the years, I have worked in a number of places. It's an understatement. But in each case where I had an office, the first thing I did once it officially became my office is I moved all the furniture around. The first time I did it, I moved all the furniture. I came back next day, and all the furniture was back where it had been before that. And I moved it all again. I put the desk against the wall, and I moved the computer to a corner, and I created a much larger space in the office for people to come in and sit and really be able to converse and talk and dialogue with each other. And then again, it happened where the desk and the chair and the computer were all back where it was the first day. So I realized that I had to sort of let somebody know that I intended to have the office look differently. Part of it was to sort of create my own space within that space, to ritualize and sanctify that space in the way that I thought it made sense best for me and the work I was trying to do. And we need those spaces in our lives because those spaces help us create the habits that we need to ultimately succeed. James Clear in the book makes the following comment. He says, stop thinking about your environment as filled with objects and start thinking about it as filled with relationships. And we start to want to create the spaces that we need and want in our lives to be able to do the things that we want to do. We start to look at what's in that space. What's going to make this place better and help me succeed more? Are my notifications on when I'm trying to do deeper work, when I'm trying to read, when I'm trying to finish out a project? Is the music playing too loud? Is it the wrong music? There is a playlist that I listen to called Deep Focus when I'm trying to do deep work. And now when I hear it initially and it goes on, boop, it's a trigger in the mind that I'm now moving into some sort of a deep work space. How do we do that for ourselves? How do we create the spaces that we need and habitualize and ritualize those locations, those spaces to become the regular and the norm? So we can maximize on our time and our space in the same way that was going on in the tabernacle in the desert with the people of Israel, that everything was lined up the way it had to be. Everything was, this was in the north, this was in the south, this was in the east, this was in the west. And so it's important for us to look at the spaces around us, where we live and where we work, and try to create the environment wherein we will be most successful and ultimately the most happy. Probably those things go relate one to the other. Where are we going to be the most happy and where are we going to be the most successful? And sort of look at the things that don't belong and maybe move them to a different space. Bring the things in that create that habit-forming ability, that comfort zone space for us where we can do the deepest and the best work possible will allow us to begin to build within us a rigor about that ritual and about that space so that ultimately when we do have to move to other spaces and other situations, we're able to somehow inculcate and bring that in to that new space. So the combination of what the Bible describes as the sacred space known as the tabernacle, which ultimately becomes the temple in Jerusalem, the sacred central space for holiness and for spirituality, is something that we can mirror in our own homes, in our own lives, and create spaces that are no longer about shallow, but about deep. The ability to go deeper with the work that we're trying to do, with the study that we're trying to do, with the maybe even the spirituality that we're trying to reach. But really look into the spaces that we're going. Try to walk into them with open eyes so they can sort of see what's going on. I'll share just one last example. Many years ago, I worked at a large communal organization in New York. And my role was to help synagogues, rabbis and leaders and their synagogues. And when we really got down to what we were trying to do, we started to think about the synagogue experience, what people were experiencing in the synagogue and how to make that a better experience for them. And so we started to go to synagogues and walk them end to end to sort of see what was happening when a person came in. I think I mentioned this once before. And the idea was to get the leadership to notice what was located where, what was in the wrong space, what needed to be moved, what needed to be found in the right place so that the sacred space was perfect, was optimized for success and for spirituality. It's the same thing that's sort of the challenge for this week is to look at the different spaces where you are and where you're in. And this is the coachable moment here. Do this with people that I work with. Create the environment where you're going to be most successful. Create the environment where you're going to be most happy. Create the environment where you're going to produce the best possible work that you can possibly produce. And anything that is in the way, that is a bottleneck or a stumbling block for it, figure out a place elsewhere for it to be. Bring into those spaces the items that foster and engender and motivate and inspire good, and take out of those environments the things that don't. So in the same way that you might put apples on the table to create an environment where people will then eat apples and be healthier, or move the snacks to a lower drawer so people don't see them naturally or at eye level when they walk into a room and take the wrong thing, so too the spaces where you're going to do the work, we are creatures of our habits and our spaces. We think that we are creatures of our own intellect and our own design and our own thinking. But more often than not, our habits are formed by the environments in which we're in. So let's create habits based on good spaces and better spaces. And ultimately, we're able to produce much greater work. That's Coaching Through the Bible for this week on Sacred Spaces. I look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great, great week.